You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. Welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show. Ed Alexander, Christopher DeSimone.
The Christy Simone Welcome Back show. Good morning.
That's me.
Back from the woods.
That's me.
Down to the desert, into the heat of the fire again. Good morning, Christy.
We are in the middle of breaking down the death of Mr. Lopez here at Tucson. We're talking about using the chief and the mayor's words of accountability and transparency. And also we'll talk about selective accountability, selective transparency, and selective outrage before this is all over. And then we'll talk about the COVID numbers before that's all over. Because that's another story and a half.
And we're all going to die.
This hour of Wake Up.
Haven't yet, but we're going
to. This hour of Wake Up Tucson brought to you by Central Arizona Block. CabcoAZ.com. Three great locations: Wetmore, Valencia, out in Sierra Vista. After we're gonna do a quick interview, and then when we come back, we're gonna get into how what went down with TPD in the city of Tucson plays into everything we've talked about over the last decade. And it's not even funny. 7:10 in the morning, you're on 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Let's go right to the phones. Let's go to Ryan Gerdesky. Did I say that right? Damn it.
Perfectly. Yeah. Thank you so much.
A lot of pressure.
Nailed
there.
It.
Wow. Ryan is one of the authors of They're Not Listening, How Elites Created the National Populist Revolution. That's a hell of a title.
Yeez. It's a big book cover.
It gives you everything you need to know. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. The book is, it's different than all other books that talk about national populism. I talk about, like, you know, Brexit, Trump, the Yellow Vest movement in France, because I kind of connect these things on a global scale. So if you look at, you know, a situation like immigration, usually talk about just America or, you know, Europe. But I talk about the situation of illegal immigration in Angola, in Africa, or in Chile with the Haitian illegal immigrants, or in India. So I try to bring this on a global perspective to make voters and make people realize that they're not alone in these issues that they're concerned about. This is something that all human beings across the entire globe, regardless of race, religion, culture, or nationality, feel, understand, and believe, and this is why it's moving across the entire world.
So let's talk about this. So the national populism revolution, how you have it, is usually something like this is a reaction to something that happened in the past. What is it a reaction to?
Well, after the Cold War ended, there was really a movement by elites around the entire globe, especially in America and Europe, to kind of remake the way the world was. I mean, America is always a nation with a mission, whether it be to move west or to, you know, defeat the Soviets. We've always had a national mission. Well, after the Cold War, our national mission was really to export liberalism, export, you know, Western liberal ideology, either through war or through trade policies, as it was with China. So we worked on exporting liberalism throughout the entire world, whether they wanted it or not. And in the process, we ignored a lot of the sentiment by working class and middle class Americans, and that slow boil anger eventually erupted in the election of Donald Trump.
So, can we use the word globalism? Is that the proper term here?
I talk about globalism a lot. Globalism, neoliberalism, all that.
So let's go Clinton, GW, and then Barack. Explain how were they that much different in promoting globalism over that 20-year period?
Yeah, well, I say the Bush Obama dynasty were really not that different. I mean, if you look at just foreign policy alone, every one of those candidates, every one of those presidents, rather, campaigned on reducing American presence abroad, ending wars, coming home, you know, doing better by veterans, spending more money on domestic policy than on foreign policy, and every one of them broke that promise. They all ran as a peace candidate. They all failed objectively. If you look at polls at the time from the 1980s onwards, Americans, a majority, or if not a plurality, according to Gallup, favored reducing legal immigration, not just illegal, but legal immigration. Every one of those presidents increased legal immigration. They wanted fairer trade deals. No one approved of the Korean trade agreement. Many people were hesitant towards NAFTA and TPP. Every one of those presidents were pro-free trade. So on the, on the small, not that they're small things, but on a lot of the culture issues, we had disagreements over gun policy or abortion. But on the main trajectory of what the world was going to look like after 8 years of their presidency, it was a continued march towards this idea of a global, you know, neoliberal future that we really had very little consent in. So finally, voters had enough within 2016, and they pushed for Donald Trump because he promised an alternative to that, as they did in Brazil in 2017 in their election, or in Italy in 2018, or in India in 2019, across the entire world. They're all saying the same exact thing, because there really is a push for more localized control over their communities, a greater say in their economy, and a greater say over the issue of, like, immigration.
So, Ryan, I described the election of Donald Trump as, this is the love child of George Bush, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, John Boehner, Bill Clinton. All of these people over the last 25 years gave birth to Donald Trump. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, and I say in the book that if, you know, in the 1990s, Bill Clinton put up a commission to understand why the black Americans in this country were having less economic prosperity than everybody else. I mean, he had former Texas Congresswoman Barbara Jordan do the commission, and her issue she came back with was saying, after this long study, was that America needed to rapidly reduce legal immigration because it was competing with black Americans, because we were importing gang activities that were hurting black Americans, this entire fantastic report. And Republicans and Democrats in the establishment parties, most of whom have retired since then, but the establishment Republicans and Democrats killed that legislation, completely slaughtered it, because they didn't want to hurt the bottom line of their business donors. Had they done that, had they slashed immigration levels in the 90s, there probably would never have been a President Donald Trump. You know, had any of these people actually followed through on their promises to do things like not have stupid wars and reduce legal immigration levels, there would have never been a need for a President Donald Trump.
Ryan, can I hold you for one more segment? Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right,
absolutely.
We're hanging out. And on your book, you say Ryan James Gerdusky.
Yeah, I'm Italian, so we always use our middle name because I was in trouble all the time.
All right. But usually, you know, some sort of professor, student leader at a university, or a serial shooter. They always used their middle name.
No, I'm a college dropout. No, there's nothing
it was
about it.
It was his mom. Ryan James, you get in here now.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
And he wrote this book with Harlan Hill. It's called They're Not Listening. And it just came out about 10 days ago. So when we come back, we're going to continue on with our discussion with Ryan James Gerdusky. The book's called They're Not Listening, How Elites Created the National Populist Revolution. And we'll continue on with TPD stuff after that. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 of the Voice. All right. Chris's first day back from vacay. We're hanging out with Ryan James Gerdusky, who, he does have a co-author named Harlan Hill. I don't want to throw Harlan under the bus. So, Harlan, congratulations.
It's true, right? Ryan would want the billing too, right? Yeah.
And of course, you can get this at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other fine retailers, as they like to say. It's called They're Not Listening, How Elites Created the National Populist Revolution. Ryan, welcome back, sir.
Good, thank you for having me.
I thought it was cute during the Brexit thing, right? There was this all-out full-court press from even guys like Barack Obama, who didn't want Brexit to happen, right? Is this part of the team globalist folks helping each other out to keep the dream alive?
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, it was a united front by most establishment people in the entire world, by most establishment parties in the entire world, that Brexit couldn't happen and shouldn't happen. And when the British government was responsible for making Brexit happen, they tried to water it down so it was basically nothing. And we've seen this, you know, in America too. And the thing about Brexit is that I think it was like 70% of all British laws were made in Brussels by a bureaucrat that they have no control over whatsoever. And I cite in the book, They're Not Listening, that At this point, the EU is basically a post-democracy. And what I mean by that is the people vote, but really the governing body doesn't change very, very much. And they have little say in the actual outcomes of what happens in their countries.
So if anyone is listening, if you want a good entertaining thing, go watch Nigel Farage talking to the EU. Any of his things with talking to these people. So what happens is you have these different community, these different countries that someone steps up, like a guy like Farage or Trump, that in reaction to this.
Yeah, I mean it's not just this. So like the book starts out from 1998 with the election of Viktor Orban because of corruption and the fall of the post-Cold War order. But things like, you know, there are so many changes that were happening incrementally before Trump that most people just weren't even aware of. So, for example, in 1998, we start bombing Kosovo. 250,000 Kosovo refugees flee to Switzerland. Switzerland elects a national populist leader. In 2001, the terrorist attacks happen in New York. Several weeks later, Denmark elects a national populist government for the first time ever, and the first thing they do is a Muslim ban. 2003, Jean-Marie Le Pen gets the second round of the French presidential elections. Things were happening all over the world, little by little by little by little by little, and it was kind of like we were frogs in water. The water was boiling and boiling and boiling, and we were just not noticing the change. The same thing is happening right now if you look at kind of like the Black Lives Matter movement. So in 2000, and I cite this in the book, in 2006, the media as a whole started using woke terminology at an increasing speed, something like 700 or 800% in our daily conversation. Terms like whiteness ended up being in 2% of all New York Times articles. 2%. That's a lot of articles if you think about it. We're talking only about like conversations through the eyes of race. And so even as things were getting better for Black Americans around the entire country, the media, the perspective was that it was getting worse. So people, interpretation of the truth is the truth. And so because of that, people are inflamed and they're angry. But when you look at data, when you look at the actual information, incarceration of Black Americans is down 40% in 30 years. Unarmed shooting and killing of Black men by police is down 80% in 5 years. The wage gap is closing. The education gap is closing. There was a study by a really great Black economist that showed that Black women who grew up in the same economic household as white women end up doing better than them in their lifetime. All the things that people wanted to see for generations are happening. It is the best time to be Black in America. And yet, because of the narrative, the constant drum beating that you're under systematic oppression, people believe they're oppressed. And now polls are showing that more Black Americans think the system is unfair than did before the Civil Rights Act was signed.
All right, so I only got you for a few more minutes. I got one big question for you.
Sure.
All of these globalists do not want a second term of Donald Trump, correct?
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Correct.
So let's talk. I want you to give us the one last big answer, the total pig pile, right, to make this country as bad as possible leading up to this election by the press, the elites. What is that? Because, look, we're in a battleground state in Arizona, right? Because
right.
It's huge for the presidency, and then the McSally Senate seat is massive for the control of the Senate.
Right.
So we're seeing it with, COVID cases are going up because the testing's going up. But when Ed and I keep looking at the stats from the state in our county, deaths and what's really going on have really kind of remained steady.
Well, death, it's a lot of young people getting it, but it's less deadly for young people. So, yeah. It's like getting the cold. I mean, for young people, it's just not as serious.
So
I think the worst.
Explain
yeah,
the pig the pile. Explain the pig pile that's happening right now, all the way through November.
I think that right now they're just trying to sit there and make sure life seems as terrible as possible for in America. And the question will come up: are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And ostensibly, if you look at the media coverage, it's not true. There's race riots, there's mass unemployment, and there's the coronavirus. But I think if you overall look at the data, you sit there and see that before the economy collapsed, wages were going up, especially for blue-collar workers. For the first time ever, the pandemic deaths are going down, and that's very, very important. And then if you look at race rights, life is better for the American public. I think that, you know, we have to combat the media because they are doing really the work of the Democratic Party and the globalists. They are a consensus media. They want the same thing, and they're pushing at it at any, you know, at any rate.
Now, So I guess the question is, what's the reality of this, right? When you look at what's going on in the heartland of America and some of these different swing states, do you think that globalist kill Trump thing? We have Democrat mayors of major cities, including the one in Tucson, that I think their job is to make his life as crappy as possible. Is there marching orders?
I live in New York City. Trust me about it. We're, you know, right now we're Gotham without the Batman. I do think that they also have an ideology. This whole thing of like abolishing the police, it's completely crazy. And who do they hurt the most? They hurt the working poor. They hurt the black community. They hurt Hispanics, and they just don't care. They do not care at all. And the media is constantly haranguing, saying it's Trump's fault, when in fact, a lot of it is these localized control. I think that if you are a center-right person at all, this is more important than anything else. You can't allow Joe Biden to come in, because with all his, you know, dementia-induced, you know, decision-making, you're going to have unelected bureaucrats making all of the decisions. It will not be him. He is not mentally capable at this point in his life to make anything. You will be governed by people who you have no say in how they treat you and what they do. I think that it's so important right now to sit there and understand that this is an attempt to sit there and reclaim what they lost in 2016.
All right. The book's called They're Not Listening, How Elites Created the National Populist Revolution. And it's by Ryan James Gurdusky and some dude named Hill.
Harlan Hill.
I'm just kidding. I'm sure. I would love to renew our conversation in the future, Ryan, if that's possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. How do people find you on the interweb?
Twitter at Ryan Gurdusky, Facebook Ryan Gurdusky, and my website ryangurdusky.com.
Excellent.
So,
well, sir,
thank you.
Congratulations
so much
on the book. It sounds like a rip snorter, and right now on Amazon for about $22, probably worth the good summer read while Ed's at the poolside in his bathing suit. So.
Yes, get educated before the election. Buy the book.
All right, Ryan. Good talking to you, sir.
Thank you.
Have a good day. When we come back, we are going to get into the world. We're going to continue this discussion about transparency and accountability. And we're going to get to the point now of what was going on in the upper echelons of TPD as this whole thing was cooking. And we're going to talk about more decisions on how the chickens came home to roost, as Jeremiah Wright once said. So CBS Bloomberg coming up next. And my brother Joe in the third hour. Wake up, Tucson. 10:30 The Voice. Oh, my boy John Wetton. I'm back. Wake up, Tucson. Oh, my God. This is unbelievable.
Welcome back, Christy Simone. Brought out all the biggies for you today.
Little velvet fog on my Monday morning.
Torme.
10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Remember, if you miss anything on this show or Zach or Bill or Steve and Jay or anything else, our weekend shows, head over to KVOI.com. You can also catch Greg's amazing Tucson History podcast about what Tucson could have been. I personally think the IBM blowing out of town with a bunch of their employees and not bringing San Jose online into Tucson was the beginning of the end of Tucson's slow economic decline. Even Fletcher can't save you with all that Rio Nuevo money.
Mm-mm.
So let's get back to this death of Mr. Lopez, the large, naked, coked-up guy. Questions from the first hour of talking about this was, we need to see the domestic violence report, because he was a stop and arrest on site was his status with the police department. And we need to hear the 911 call from his Nana and what she was saying in relation to that, because I'm sure it was a pretty frantic call. So remember when I brought up, Ed, about the police and how it changes the dynamic of your encounters with people, especially violent ones like Mr. Lopez, that if you don't think backup's coming, it changes your whole thing, because you'd like to go home to your family before the night's over.
Right. And you know you got a big coked up guy on your hands.
So from one of our TPD folks, there is no backup during that squad at that time of the morning. And then the question came up, Ingrid talked about the ambulance, right? Fire does not show up to a scene unless it's secure.
Ha. Huh. Can't
now,
do it.
So then let's go to, let's see what we got here. I think this is Craig Smith. Let's see before I shoot my mouth off. Oh, Sam Radwani over at KGUN 9. I put this up on my Facebook if you want to check it out. Christopher D. Simone says, timeline, what happened after man died while in TPD custody? So April 22nd, Magnus and other TPD officials are briefed on incident. June 17th, almost a month later, Rahina says this is the first time she's informed of the situation. Okay. Now, so we have a month or a little less than a month that he's sitting on this. Now, Tia Gloria has told me, and she's right? The Magnus reports to Ortega. But in the end, Ortega is at the whim of these four people, at least four of these people on this council. And if you're not telling the mayor of your city, Rothschild would have never put up with the idea that you're going to hold this back, a huge thing like this, in what's going on in the world for a month. Remember, we have more than ever after, you know, when Jonathan was there, if you averaged it out, you had about a B or a C team at the city council. Oh, that's right. I apologize. 2 months. My math's bad. They sat on it for 2 months. I apologize.
April, May.
Bad month. I'm bad. I'm in vacation mode. I should be at the Pine Top Brewery drinking a Belgian beer right now. But we're rocking it out as best as possible on this Monday. So here's the thing. So for 2 months, they sat on this thing. And if you told Rothschild, if Rothschild found out 2 months that he had to wait for something like this in relation to what was going on in the world, he would have ripped somebody's head off. So after Rothschild leaves, the C team went to a D team. I mean, we got the D team running the city of Tucson right now in relation to elected officials. Now, so Rahina's got 2 months where they're sitting on this. Now, who's in charge of the Oversight Bureau at TPD? Let's look at that again, because that's where this Office of Professional Standards is, where you would make a complaint against an officer, right? So let's look at that real quick. Oh, that's Mike Silva. He's the assistant chief. This is from the City of Tucson website. He's oversees analysis engagement in the Oversight Bureau. He's from Tucson. He has he has a degree from the U of A in public administration. He's an Air Force guy. Let's see. Oh, he was an MP in the Air Force years ago. Then he enrolled again to get his law degree. Then, let's see, he worked at Homeland, Attorney General's office. He worked in the D.C. office of Senator John McCain. Let's see what else. Then he was a private civil litigator dealing with liability issues for several years. Then he worked as a prosecutor for the city of Tucson before being selected as the department's legal advisor. Then he became Magnus's first civilian chief of staff. And then most people were astounded and blown away and pissed off that he was made an assistant chief in the city of Tucson, even though he's not a cop. Though no easy task, he remains he spends his off time attempting to keep up with his family. He's a remained devoted Wildcat and can be found every home game in what he calls the Bear Down Barge, his U of A themed motorhome. That's from his official profile. So this guy Silva is best buddies with Magnus. Okay. Silva, when he would come in, when Magnus first started coming on the show, Silva would follow around him like like Grima Wormtongue from the Lord of the Rings. That's only a Lord of the Rings statement some of you would get. Just like Igor following around Frankenstein, that's Silva. Yes, you want water, Chief? That kind of thing. Reminds me of some of these people who run for Congress that come through the door, and they always have to have that handler, you know, who's like the 21-year-old intern running around. Do you want something, Mrs. Candidate, Mr. Candidate? So Silva is a non-sworn. He's not a sworn officer, and Magnus pissed off everyone below by making him assistant chief. So when you take guys like Chad and Hall, who are, you know, longtime officers, and you take this guy who's buddies with the chief, who is his chief of staff, who's a lawyer, and you elevate him to assistant chief. So this is why Tucson is what Tucson is. You have an assistant police chief who's not a cop. But it's very interesting that Mike Silva is in charge of the Office of Professional Standards. So when you see the Sam Rodwani story on this timeline, and it says Chief Magnus and other TPD officials are briefed on the incident on April 22nd, and they sat on it for 2 months before Rahina gets to know about it. I'm just telling you, his buddy is in charge of the oversight of the police officers. Okay? Make your own inferences as you wish. But let's get more. I'm going to actually use the Arizona Daily Star, which I rarely use anymore. The paper's so pathetic, they're asking for your help to interview Pima County attorney candidates because everyone's on furlough.
What the hell are you talking about?
But, you know, someone who has done some nice work over the years is Carol Ayne Analemo. And so this is her story from June 27th, which was 2 days ago. The three TPD officers who resigned last week were cleared to return to work almost immediately and remained on duty for nearly 2 months. Attorney Mike Story says he wants TPD Police Chief Chris Magnus to publicly explain why TPD found no need to put the officers on desk jobs or administrative leave after the incident occurred, yet now says they are unfit for the job. So what Story, who represents TPOA, maintains the officers effectively had no choice to resign. He said Magnus became set on firing them after the city council recently learned of the in-custody death, which TPD failed to disclose at the time it occurred. So think about that, okay? So these guys get cleared almost immediately after this happens. And they were so cleared by Magnus and his buddy Silva and maybe the two assistant other police chiefs that they didn't do the classic put them on a desk job or administrative leave while they were back on the streets for 2 months until this happened. Mike Story, the lawyer, says, okay, so quote, here's a quote from Story. The Tucson Police Department command staff hijacked the internal investigation to ensure an outcome that would please the mayor, unquote.
Listen to me. What was that?
This is from Mike Story, the attorney. This is in the Arizona Daily Star. Hey, I'll make Tim and Sarah feel better. The paper of record.
Oh.
Hold on.
The dead star, yes.
Sorry. The paper of record by Carol Ann Alemo, who I think Carol Ann has done some solid work over the years. Her and Caitlin Schmidt are like actual reporters, unlike some of the other hacks over there. But let me do the quote again from TPOA attorney Mike Story. Quote, the Tucson Police Department command staff hijacked the internal investigation to ensure an outcome that would please the mayor. Unquote. Rahina calls the lawyer's claim, quote, unsubstantiated, deceptive, and baseless, unquote. It's unfortunate. This is the Rahina. This is in an email to Carol Ann. It's unfortunate that Mr. Story is focused on cooking up unfounded conspiracy theories rather than acknowledging the deeply troubling events that led up to the death of CAIL. Unquote.
Wowza, baby. Go, Rahina.
So I love this one. Quote, Chief Magnus owes the mayor and council and the public an explanation on this and many other aspects of this case and how it was handled internally by TPD, unquote. Magnus said he took action against the officers because it's warranted. So you mean 7 weeks after you cleared them to go back to work, now all of a sudden it's warranted?
Get a call from the mayor going, what the hell are you doing?
So here's the funny thing. He says he's limited in what he can publicly say because the city may be sued and the county attorneys are still reviewing the case. You know what the pressure is on those county attorneys to bring charges against those cops, right? It's massive.
Now.
So Babs has a big decision here, right? Because if Babs's attorneys, that's Babs the Wall, as I like to call her, if Babs's attorneys say, we don't have much to in relation to this to, quote, charge these guys criminally, you got yourself a hootenanny. I mean, it's a hootenanny and a half here. All right, so here's the... No, I guess... Now, this gets better. Carol Ann... let's go to break. It's 7:48. Carol Ann Alamo, totally amazing here. Wait till I get to this next... We're going to get to Chief Magnus. Remember we said accountability and transparency?
What?
We're going to do the opposite, as George Costanza said when we come back. 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. It's Rahina's town. Here we go. Pull down those statues. Break all the windows. We don't need cops. All right, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show. I promised you a money quote out of the Carol Ann Alamo piece here. It just gets better. So remember, there's two reasons why Magnus supposedly didn't tell the council about this and they dragged on, okay? Number one, he said, is COVID. I got to do the button, sorry.
Yeah, COVID. Oh, that's why. Thanks, Chief.
So COVID, like remember how everyone blames the recession from 12 years ago on why they suck now? Right? Now it's COVID.
Next 10 years. 10 years.
It reminds me of the Phil Hartman as Bill Clinton skit on Saturday Night Live when he's trying to he goes to a McDonald's on the campaign. He's not allowed to eat fatty food, but he keeps explaining the Somalia situation by saying he'll eat someone's hamburger and go, well, this is what the refugees want. Here's the UN's burger. And then he eats it. He goes, oh, warlords. Warlords store the hamburger. That's what I remember when it's COVID. Everything's COVID. It's COVID. That's why the chief couldn't tell the council COVID. Here we go. Back to Carol Ann. This is great. In an email interview Friday, Magnus acknowledged the officers who resigned were allowed to stay on the job because the original investigators did a faulty job. So he's throwing the investigators under the bus.
How do you say, Christy Simone, it's always somebody else's fault, right?
I'm telling you, bro.
When it comes to Rahina, the police chief, the city council, it's always somebody else's fault.
So he throws his own guys under the bus.
Jeez.
Quote, the individuals initially assigned to the investigation failed to properly put the executive leadership team on notice about the critical failures at the scene by some of the involved officers.
What was the chief doing for 2 months? He had this for 2 months. Doesn't he not run this place?
His boy, Mike Silva, is the OPS guy, Office of Professional Standards guy. Please don't. The guy died. And you say what he didn't. He used a lot of big words here. A lot of million-dollar words here by this guy, by the 2 cent police chief. So, quote, then a new team of experienced investigators So here's the line. Okay, here's the best one. So he says, we put a new team of experienced investigators to review and continue and complete the administrative investigation. The two previous guys that they had in there, Lieutenant Mickey Peterson and Lieutenant James Wakefield, are former TPD internal affairs investigators. They needed more experience. I'm telling you, man.
Excuses, excuses, excuses.
It's not just excuses.
Somebody else's fault.
It's just not excuses.
Ineptitude all the way to the top.
I don't know if this is enforcing the conclusion. That's the other part of this is. There's ineptitude, and then there's kind of forcing this conclusion. Get the heat off of the mayor and his boy, right? And hang these three officers out to dry after they were already cleared.
Of course.
Do you understand how much the city has now left itself open for that lawsuit? If I'm this guy's lawyers, I'm like, oh, you guys already cleared him. I think McCluskey used the word double jeopardy. You already cleared him, and now you're gonna go after him again. By putting, think about it, they changed out investigators. To me, because I don't trust any of these people, it looks like to me that they changed out investigators to get what they wanted.
Because they didn't like the results they were getting.
Correct. From the two experienced guys, Lieutenant Peterson and Wakefield didn't give them the answer they wanted. So think about this. Not only the after those guys came up and their investigation, remember, their report cleared them, and guess who let them go back to duty after those guys cleared them? Magnus! They went back to duty. He didn't say, oh, I'm a little worried about that. We should put him on administrative leave, or we're going to put him on a desk job until we figure this out. But that didn't happen. He put other people in there, okay?
Okay. When you weren't here, the day after the press conference, they showed the video. He says, I'm going to resign. I'm going to give you my resignation. And Rahina goes, oh, you can't do that. I didn't know you were going to do that. And of course, everybody votes, you know, 1, 2, 3. The press releases come out all day.
I'm going to tell you something. Someone else told me that this morning on my way in, that she was surprised.
Yeah, well, that was the story.
I think it's an act.
The story, she was surprised. She was over her head as usual. But what happens is, the first thing I said was, look, so the chief gets off and these three other officers are swinging in the wind. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what's happening. These guys have been hung in front of the city and the press and everything. They are guilty as hell, according to the chief who just got off because he's standing next to his girl.
He gets to keep his job.
That's bull.
Three guys get thrown to the wolves. Because in the end, this is
twisting in the wind, just like the old days in the old West.
I'm just telling you, man. What's going on now? The reaction to this, okay?
It's all about racism.
Well, the thing that really hurts their case, right, is the one of the officers is black, right? Because Rahina was probably hoping to have three white guys be bad to the Hispanic gentleman.
Oh yeah.
But now. Maybe she just put the Black Lives banner up at City Hall. So I think she was hoping to have three white guys be part of this man's demise. That would make this easier.
It's kind of a little stuck in the
corner. And the police chief that she's given so much props to as the greatest police chief ever had this happen. Not only have this happen on his, but remember, one of the real reasons they happen is they're still so understaffed. There was no backup. That's what I just heard that from my TPD officer. There's no backup for a 1 o'clocker available right now. We don't have enough people. I'm going to tell you, one of the reasons maybe they didn't put these guys on administrative leave is they need cops on the streets. How's that for a weird thing? We're going to continue this on. I bumped Joe a little bit later so we can continue on with this. So Brother Joe coming up soon. So we're going to keep on this cop thing when we come back because there's like five more things I need to get off my chest about this. 10:30 The Voice.
You've been gone a while. We need to catch up.
Local news and talk. Sit down. Sit by the fireplace. We'll catch up.